702.
The Aubrey Masango Show.
Live, online.
Smartphones, DSTV.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
14 minutes after 9 o'clock, and I'm joined on the line by Professor Motlalipula Matsabisa, Professor and Director of Pharmacology, Faculty of Health Sciences at the University of the Free State. He joins me now on the line. Prof, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for inviting me to your program.
Prof.
And thanks to your listeners for listening to me too.
Thank you so much. Prof, you know, we had a conversation about 2 or 3 weeks ago with Professor Ben Eric van Wyk. He's a national research chair in indigenous plant use at the University of Johannesburg. We thought it'd be great to speak to you as a follow-up conversation to that, as we try to understand the wealth that we have on the African continent in terms of traditional medicines. And I would imagine that the issue of urbanization, again, it's an issue of history, but the issue of urbanization has created a distance between us and the knowledge of the traditional medicines that exist there, such that sometimes we are alienated from that wealth that we have. How do we reconnect with our traditional medicines, with the wealth of pharmaceutical knowledge that is here on the African continent?
Yeah, so thank you so much. Indeed, it is true. We are also facing, I think, you know, challenges in terms of, I think, you know, our language is, you know, facing near, extinction. In the sense that you'll see that we don't like speaking our languages. You may be not surprised that you find two people who understand each other, but still be speaking foreign language.
Mm.
And this is even difficult, I think, you know, for us to begin to follow our cultures, because we still have, I think, you know, the bad thinking that this is, you know, backward. This is barbaric. So the best way, I think, you know, that we are actually, you know, asking is some of these things need to be put up into, I think, our curricula. They need to be put up, I think, you know, into the education system, where we really show, you know, that these are our languages, and we need to be proud of, like any other country that is proud of its, I think, you know, heritage and I think its languages. We shouldn't think that, you know, the English is more superior to any other language, and therefore their culture, you know, is superior. While in fact, on the other hand, you'll find that, you know, the same people that we look up to, in fact, they do, I think, you know, use, you know, traditional medicine systems. They still believe in herbalism, but for us, we are made to think that this is something we need to be ashamed of.
Yeah, and it's a sad reality, Prof. I mean, I listen to you speak at the moment, and I think of the various situations that we tend to be complexed towards that which is our own. It's very, very sad. Let's talk about the fundamental philosophies behind traditional medicine. I mean, I remember having a conversation with another luminary talking about the orientation of traditional medicine is really about prevention rather than cure. Would that be true?
I would actually tend to disagree with that.
Yeah.
You know, in the sense that traditional medicines can actually do three things. Not only can it be preventative, you know, that means we call it in the science as prophylaxis. You know, let's say for instance, if you were to travel to a country where there is malaria,
yes.
Okay, then you normally hear, you know, doctors giving you chloroquine or mefloquine, some of those drugs, which in fact they come from plants.
Yes.
You know, when you take this 2 weeks before you go into, you know, such an area, That's a prophylaxis. That's preventative.
Yes.
No traditional medicines can do that. But traditional medicines is curative as well. You know, it's curative in the sense that, you know, if you have infections, whether it's bacterial, viral infections, including metabolic, you know, diseases. By metabolic diseases, I'll talk about diabetes, you know, for instance, hypertension. Those medicines, in fact, interestingly, that your metformin that we use for diabetes comes from a plant. And it is therefore not preventative. It is actually curative.
Mm.
So we argue and say traditional medicines can be curative. We used to treat, you know, or animals, you know, traditional people know how to do this. If your cow gets, you know, a broken leg, you know, they would treat it. You know, it's not preventing it. They would treat it. And then the last thing is actually restorative. I think, you know, in nature, you know, traditional medicines can be used to restore and support the body's, I think, innate systems. You know, you use it, you know, to in support of restoring, you know, your normal systems. We normally talk about immune modulators. You know, immune modulators, if someone has a very low immune system, traditional medicines would actually bring up the immune system to a normal state. So it's not curing, it's not, you know, preventing, but it's actually restoring. So I think that's how I would argue. I think the contrary, you know, to people who say traditional medicines is only, you know, preventative.
I suppose that conversation was in a particular context, and perhaps I need to clarify that. And the context was really the issue of, I'll say it anyway. It was a big conversation around the employment of Cuban doctors, around the whole issue of the COVID pandemic. And South African doctors were saying, but how come we're talking about Cuban doctors having experience in these things when everybody has never dealt with COVID-19? And, you know, some people were beginning to say that, no, the Cuban doctors have a far more stronger emphasis in the way that they practice medicine on prevention rather than curative issues and so forth. So that's where the conversation came from. Prof, it brings me back to that particular issue, the issue of the pandemic, COVID-19. And I'm not necessarily sure. You'll give us clarity in this regard. Why haven't we seen a greater emphasis of traditional medicines? And I'm not just talking about African traditional medicines. Given the fact that we heard that the COVID-19 virus emanated from China, which is a country that is very well known for the use of traditional Chinese medicine. In other words, not the Western type of medicine. How come traditional medicines and the approaches and philosophies of traditional medicines have not yet been seen to emerge strong in these conversations?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's one main reason for that. One, it's all about the, you know, the economics. I think, you know, talk I said, We need equity, you know, in research funding. You know, we need to be, traditional medicine needs to be funded, you know, equitably, so that then I think the impact can be seen. As long as, you know, our governments, you know, are denialist in nature, you know, around traditional medicine and its development, you will always see that traditional medicines, you know, research and its development, it's sort of put at the back burner and nobody, I think, hears about it. While, in fact, great discoveries, you know, of the past pandemics, you know, in fact, they were eradicated not through sort of modern medicines or not through vaccines, but in fact, they were eradicated through, I think, you know, your non-pharmaceutical interventions, and they were eradicated through the use of traditional medicines. I like making examples, you know, of your 19, I think, you know, the Spanish flu, I think it was around 1918.
Yeah.
There were literally no vaccines, you know, for that time. And what the doctors at the time and the traditionalists did was then to select a few plants that have been used in traditional medicine. And they used those plants, I think, you know, in the fight against, you know, the Spanish flu. And then you can get the same story that I can share, I think, with the listeners about, you know, the Russian flu, the Australian, you know, I think, you know, pandemics. And all of these, they were not eradicated because of, you know, the vaccines. So this aspect of, you know, research equity, it's actually very important. And I would want also to say that it's very interesting that even our African, I think, governments and states, you know, are denialist in nature. You know, they do not want to support, you know, traditional medicine. Now, let me quickly go back to the COVID issue.
Yeah.
You know, COVID, the virus, you know, that causes COVID, there are many of them. And some of those viruses, you know, have been known to us for many, many years.
Yes.
Because they cause your common cold. But it is only, I think, this particular virus that has been, you know, very, you know, serious. Now, before COVID-2, the SARS-CoV-2, which is the one we have now,
yes,
there was SARS-CoV-1.
Yes.
And at the time, again, you know, I'm not against, you know, vaccines, but I'm really talking about learning from our past. They tried to develop a vaccine. It never succeeded, you know, because, you know, of the variants that we are beginning to see. And then even now, you are beginning to see a lot of variants, and we argue and say, yes, you know, vaccines are not curative for COVID, and vaccines are not preventative for COVID. So even if you were to get your jab now, it does not mean you are not going to get COVID.
Yes.
It does not mean you are not going to transmit COVID to another person.
Yes.
But it will really increase your chances of survival. Same as your BCG, when babies are get given BCG when they are born.
That's right.
They're given BCG so that at least, you know, the TB does not become so virulent, because we'll still go and get TB anyway.
Yeah.
And the number of plants have been used, I think, you know, for the H1N1, you know, the Asian, you know, flu. They were not vaccines. In fact, the Tamiflu, which is the drug that was discovered from the Chinese spice plant, you know, star anise.
Yes.
That's the one that actually got rid of, I think, you know, the Asian flu, the H1N1, the H1N5. You know, it was not a vaccine. And I've been also not silly, you know, to say a lot of money was invested, you know, on HIV, you know, to develop an HIV vaccine. And we still do not have an HIV vaccine, while in fact AZT, you know, was discovered, you know, from a natural product, from a plant. So my argument that I'm saying, you know, is it's simply because our government, you know, are denialist in nature. They do not want to accept that we have the knowledge. It is fair and good, you know, when everybody talks about we've got the knowledge, we've got so many plants. But the question is, what do we do about that knowledge? You know, what do we do about those plants? Somebody said, I think some time ago, that, you know, a pile of bricks does not make a house. So when you see a pile of bricks, it does not mean it is a house.
Sure.
So as is a collection of facts, you know, does not make science. So you need to put all these things together so that then you come up with this house. So I'm really saying, you know, in terms of COVID, you know, a lot of Chinese medicines, you know, have been, I think, you know, tried and tested in clinical trials in China. We don't hear much about them. Even here in South Africa, I think a lot of work was done, you know, on traditional medicines. There is one product that is now going into clinical trials, you know, for COVID patients. But we hear very little about that, you know, simply because we prefer, you know, to buy our own knowledge when it comes back as a commodity from, you know, the north. And that's, I think, the mentality we need to change, that we need to believe in ourselves, we need to believe in our sciences.
Do you believe, Prof, that even now as we are grappling with COVID-19, and you've just added another dimension to the battle, the attitudes towards traditional medicine and the denialism, as you've called it, do you believe that there is a cure for COVID-19 right now in traditional ways?
I'm very positive, you know, that in the fight against any disease, you cannot just put your eggs in one basket. Mm. You know, you need to look, you know, at all the open, I think, avenues. And I always say that as scientists, you know, we need to look at different things, because once you come up with one drug, it quickly goes, I think, becomes, you know, not effective because of a number of things, including resistance, you know, for COVID. You know, you have, I think, what we have seen with the variants that came, that I think the vaccines were not effective on some certain variants. And these variants keep coming, you know, and we do not know whether the next variant that comes, you know, it's going to be more virulent than the current one we have, or it will just be a variant. And there's a fear that I think sometimes, I think you may have the resistance, you know, developing. So let's not put our eggs in one basket. So let's begin also, I think, you know, to look at what we can, you know, in terms of, you know, traditional medicines. Now, I believe that I think there could be a solution, you know, in terms of traditional medicines, in the sense that if you look at, you know, I'm not saying people must not go and vaccinate.
Yep.
People must vaccinate, because we are saying the interventions for any disease, it's not like a one shot. You know, you have to come up with, you know, strategies. You know, people must go and vaccinate and save lives. But vaccines work at one stage, you know, or one phase of the disease, in the beginning, when the virus is still there.
Yeah.
Once you go into a phase two of the COVID, you know, disease, the virus actually has disappeared. So therefore, your vaccine will not work. But you still then have, you know, your immune system, you know, going berserk. You still have what we call your cytokine storm.
Yes.
And how then do people treat, I think, you know, cytokine, you know, storms, or how then do they treat what we call long COVID, or, you know, your post-COVID? They use antioxidants, you know, they use immune modulators. Now, where would these antioxidants come from? You know, vitamin C, you know, from your oranges.
Yes.
And then your immune modulators, where do they come from? You know, from
sure.
your plant.
Sure.
So therefore, we are saying, let us come up, I think, with, you know, an armament, you know, of treatment, where these treatments can be complementary to each other. And we can see a role, you know, of vaccines. So as we can see a role, you know, of traditional medicines. Traditional, also, I think, sorry, again, we talk about, you know, coagulation, blood clots, you know, in COVID. And a number of plants, you know, are used as anticoagulants. You know, there are compounds in plants that literally can dissolve some of these, you know, clots. And therefore, the mechanism, you know, through which plants work, it's varied, and it can in fact attack, you know, the onset of COVID at different drug sites.
Right, right.
Whether it is at the entry of the virus, or
yeah.
whether once the virus has entered the cell,
yeah.
so then the plants can work through there.
Prof, I want to take a quick call, but there's a question related to what you said. All right, let's take the call from Brett in Four Ways. Hi, Brett.
Prof, great to talk to hear you on the radio. Such a knowledgeable person, fantastic. I was wondering why cannabis isn't being used more, and rejecting the Western criminalization of cannabis, because the reason why it was criminalized, it has nothing to do with the healing properties of cannabis. And I'm just wondering why in Africa we haven't rejected that Western idea that cannabis is something evil and wrong and bad, and embraced it for such a fantastic healing product.
Yeah. I would imagine, though, that that process has started because it's no longer criminal to use cannabis for your own. You can plant it in your own, but it's the commercial side of things that still needs to be clarified, Brett. But I agree with you that there needs to be a major mind and paradigm shift around the issue of cannabis and its healing properties. But let's hear what the professor has to say. Brett and Foyce, thanks very much. Prof, cannabis?
Yes, thank you so much. Cannabis, I always say, I know that government is developing like a master plan, you know, to look at, you know, criminalization of cannabis. I see it in that master plan. And one of the things I said to them was, as long as we look at cannabis as a drug, as a narcotic, we're not going to go anywhere. But we need to start looking at cannabis as a drug in development, you know, and move away from the narcotic aspects of cannabis. I do a lot of research on medical cannabis, you know, looking at, you know, the data that people grew. And there are benefits that could be, I think, you know, derived. The challenge that I think the country, you know, has is, you know, because of the narcotics board sitting somewhere, I think, in Geneva, and then giving, I think, countries quotas. But I think one of the messages that I think we put through, I think, you know, to the government was, as long as the government can show that they can control the illicit trade, you know, of cannabis, they can request any quota, you know, from the narcotics board in Switzerland. But also, I think we're saying if we could put in very good, I think, regulatory frameworks, you know, for cannabis and make sure that, you know, everybody, including the people in the rural areas in the Eastern Cape, you know, who have been growing cannabis, you know, contribute into the total full value chain of the medicinal development of cannabis. We will, in fact, you know, see the illicit, you know, trade of cannabis dying its natural death. That's what we need to do. If we are sort of dilly-dallying in terms of coming up with regulations and, you know, the decriminalization of cannabis, in fact, we are supporting and flaring up, you know, the illicit market for cannabis.
Prof, I want to ask this question because I think that it may be helpful in us understanding what we are talking about when we speak of traditional medicine versus the existence of certain herbs, naturally occurring plants, perhaps even volcanic materials that occur naturally that are used also by Western medicine. I tend to get the sense sometimes that in the conversation that we have about traditional medicine, we tend to make it sound like when we speak of traditional medicine, we're speaking of the naturally occurring herbs, plants, and things that are here that can heal. That is not traditional medicine, if I understand it correctly. That is just stuff that we can use, whether it's Western medicine or traditional medicine. My question then becomes, what aspects of the way that these herbs, these volcanic materials, which exist naturally, makes it traditional medicine? Does my question make sense? In other words, the fact that there is a plant called lengana or a plant called cannabis, well, that's a natural phenomenon. That's not necessarily medicine. Medicine is the application of that plant in the process of healing a disease or preventing a disease or whatever the case may be. What I'm trying to, ask in a very roundabout way is, what makes medicine traditional? And how is it therefore different from what we term Western medicine? Because sometimes it feels like there's a binary approach to this conversation that says it is African medicine against Western medicine. Whereas I've seen how, for example, medicines that treat malaria are derived from African traditional medicine that, of course, Big Pharma has then taken over and the politics around that. But is there a demarcation to be made, a line to be drawn between the way that these naturally occurring plants are then changed and transformed into medicines for the treating or the curing of disease?
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah, because in fact, I think you got it right. You may have a medicinal plant, okay? Medicinal plant because it has got some attributes, you know, of being, you know, giving I think an effect to the body. Let me put it that way. But the way the plant is being used, you know, over the years in tradition, and the practices that are put together in there, you know, to use the plant in the healing process, that's what makes it, you know, a traditional medicine.
Yeah.
So it becomes a traditional medicine for a particular philosophy. In
yeah.
this instance, we are talking about, you know, the African traditional medicine.
Yes.
Okay? You may then have another plant, you know, say the same plant, and then you'd find that in Chinese medicine, it is used in that particular, I think, you know, discipline and philosophy
yeah.
in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it now a traditional Chinese medicine. So when you talk about an African medicine, it is actually the use of that plant within, you know, the philosophies, you know, of African medicine.
See, the reason why I raise that, Prof, is that the political types like to create consternation where it actually doesn't exist.
Mm.
So in other words, what I'm trying to say is that the fact that we have a particular plant, unless we are using it, as you say, in a particular way, within a particular medicinal philosophy, it is not yet a medicine. It's a plant, right?
Yeah.
And so the question then becomes, what then does traditional medicine, see, now I'm talking about the medical sort of discipline as informed by the philosophies of this continent and the people of this continent and the conditions of this continent. What is it that makes it a medicine? Sirukulu becomes medicine when what happens? Lingana becomes medicine when what happens? Because Lingana occurs even in Europe. Maybe it's a different form of the Artemisia family of plants, but it occurs there. It occurs in China. It is only when it is used in the process of healing or prevention of disease that we now call it medicine. Now, my question for you, it becomes more about how do we take all of this wealth and then produce a medicinal philosophy that is going to complement all other philosophies in the fighting against disease of any type, if I make sense, Prof.
Yes, correctly. I mean, a plant is a plant,
yeah.
you know, until you prepare it, you know, in a particular way, and until you put it up, you know, for it now to be consumed and used as a medicine. So the way you prepare it, the way then I think, you know, you apply it, that makes it a medicine. But a plant just sitting there, you cannot just go and start chewing a plant and say because it is a medicine. Yes, some you can do that. But it is the formulation, how you formulate it, how you prepare it,
yeah.
you know, for it then to be used in a particular way, then it becomes a medicine.
Yeah.
In say for instance, I think in the sphere of the sciences where we work, you know, and I would use this whole thing. You get into the I think the laboratories and you hear people talking about, you know, we're making you know, or doing drug research or drug discovery. That's the way medicine starts to be developed. You know, whether it is from a plant or whether it is from a new chemical made in the lab, but immediately then you take what you call the drug, which could be the plant, and you formulate it up, you know, into something that can then be either swallowed or injected or things like that. Then once you get to that stage, it becomes a medicine with now a prescription to say this is how you must use it and this is how I think it should be used for this condition.
Yes.
So that, I think, you know, what a medicine is. But there are many ways and approaches where you can make medicines, you know, from plants. One, you know, we can make vaccines from plants, you know, which a lot of us, you know, has not taken that seriously. But a lot of vaccines do come from plants.
Yeah.
And then you then can also make what you call, you know, your herbal medicines. So you take up a plant, whether it is a combination of different plants, and you prepare it into a formulation without doing many other things. Maybe you just do it, boil it up in water, filter it, put it up there, and you sell it as a tincture. You know, that's a herbal medicine.
Yeah.
The other approach then would be to find the molecules that are in those plants, like for instance your aspirin or your dispirin. It comes from, I think, you know, Muduani, that's the wild willow.
Yes.
But how then did that happen? You know, we then you know, took the plant into the lab, you know, you extract it, you find the chemicals, until you find that it is a chemical called salicylic acid, you know, that comes from, you know, Muduani.
Yes.
And that's the one that I think, you know, then gets formulated up to make up what you know as your aspirin.
Yes.
You know, and those are the different forms, you know, that I think, you know, plants and the knowledge, you know, when combined together could actually make up the medicine.
The reason why I mentioned that, Prof, is that very often people will froth at the mouth and talk about, oh, African medicine, African medicine, when they are actually just talking about a particular plant, right?
Yeah.
And I'm arguing that while it's just a plant, it's not yet medicine.
Yeah.
Unless there is a particular prescriptive process of turning that plant and finding its medicinal qualities and using it for a particular ailment, then we are talking about medicine, right? So for example, you know, the use of volcanic material, and I learned this from Dr. Zulu in one of our conversations, certain volcanic material for dealing with acid reflux, stuff that you can take to bring about a certain level of alkalinity in your stomach. That is a knowledge that is fundamentally of here that has been used everywhere else. That is the medicinal application of some of that stuff. To take some of that volcanic stuff and to wash your body with it. You know, what people can call iswasho. It has those medicinal qualities, but the knowledge to know how to apply it, that's the medicine. Now,
that's the medicine part, yes.
Now the issue that I'm trying to raise in that sense, therefore, is there research being done? I heard the Minister of Higher Education, Mr. Bladen Zimande, a couple of months ago, maybe a year or so ago, when we started to hear about the COVID-19 issue, say that, yeah, they fought to get a research thing going on at your university. And I think he quoted something like 15 million rands. And I thought to myself, 15 million rands, really? I mean, that's a mockery of what needs to be spent in order for us to understand the medicinal philosophies that will be able to help us fight against COVID-19 as part of our a global collaboration against this thing, COVID-19. And what I'm, I suppose, looking for is, show me the medicine. The medicine. I know that this plant has got certain qualities of being able to deal with this. I mean, you can go to Ikuto or marijuana, the holy herb. You can go to things like aloe. You can go to the kanker boom. You can go to many different things. The fact that we know that these things have medicinal qualities hasn't given us the medicine that we need. Now, my question is, what medicinal philosophies are in existence now for us to be able to deal with the diseases that we are contending with now?
We actually need collaborative, efforts. I always say no one can develop, a medicine, alone, in isolation. No one institution can do that, And as it comes to traditional, medicine application, for disease prevention or cure or sort of reconstitution, We then also need the knowledge holders, the traditional medicine people,
yeah,
to be part of that process, of the research and the development, so that then they can bring in the knowledge and the philosophy. How then should this be done? Because sometimes I think, you may take something into the lab and you do it your own way and you mess up like trivial, very important steps, I think, in the production of those medicines, because one, the mindset of how we have been taught to produce medicine, and the methodologies that we use, which in fact now we are beginning to find that they may not be applicable, for us to develop our traditional medicines. I mean, if we argue and say we have so many medicinal plants, why can't we then, on the other hand, find cures for these many diseases?
Yeah.
And the answer simply lays is it could be the methods and the approaches that we use, that may not be appropriate, for the development of the medicine part of the plant.
So here's a beautiful message coming through, and this person has not signed it. He says, shouldn't the conversation be about the healer than the product used? Mentioning plant names for healing to ordinary people might be dangerous, as there are some of IC preparations. I'm not really sure what IC means, but IC preparations, dosages, applications known by trained healers, be it an academic doctor or a sangoma. And I think that this particular message hits the nail, Prof, about what I'm trying to get to say, in the final analysis, we will probably find that every single plant out there, in the right combinations, in the right dosages, with the right knowledge, has healing qualities, right? That any plant, that any rock, any compound, out there, has healing qualities. The only thing that we don't have is the knowledge of how to get the right dosages, the right combinations. My question still goes back to saying, is there perhaps something that we're not doing in finding what African traditional approaches to medicines can contribute to the collaborative work of global medical practitioners, whether it's Chinese, whether it's Western, whether it's Southern, whether it's Northern, that can, because the fight here is the fight against disease.
Yes.
So is there something that African traditional medicine can contribute, because it's uniquely African and its approach is such that it can add a dimension that perhaps isn't there in the approach to healing? Is there something like that? Does my question make sense?
It does make sense. One, I think, we are restricted by the funding. I think you just mentioned that. I mean, what is 15 million rand if we really want to develop new medicines? Okay, let me not call them drugs.
Yep.
If you want to develop new medicines, and you have said it, a medicine, you know, it's a formulation, you know, with a specific usage, with a specific dose, and instructions on how to use it. That is a medicine.
Yeah.
A plant is a plant growing there, you know, and a plant can be, you know, a medicinal plant, but it is not a medicine until, you know, you then have a particular way of making it and using it. But I think, you know, we need collaborative efforts. We need money. You know, we need collaborative efforts. You know, we need to work with everybody, you know, traditional healers, you know, scientists, you know, the pharmaceutical industry,
yeah,
you know, government, you know. This becomes a concerted effort of everybody,
mm,
you know. But I still believe for the current pandemic, you know, traditional medicines, and whether you look at medicinal plants, including cannabis, they could play a role. It is just for us to find, you know, what is the best way, you know, to develop them into these medicines. And again, I think we need the best ways to develop them. That is not long.
Yes.
That can bring, I think, the medicine to the table as quickly as possible, but having done the right sciences, you know, to prove that.
Yeah.
So, but I still agree with you, you know, 100%, that you cannot just go and start choosing a plant, you know, for research, but there needs to be something that leads you to that plant.
Yeah.
And the something that leads you to that plant is the traditional medicine usage of that plant.
I've been in trouble because I've said, look, man, the debate about, hey, you know, our knowledge systems here is not helpful. it can be nice for, I suppose, certain sentiments, but it's not helping us deal with disease, right? And so that's why I'm happy about your assertion that the effort needs to be collaborative. It needs to involve honest investments, not just token investments by political individuals and pharmaceutical companies that want to show that, no, we put a little bit of money in this thing. It needs real, because I honestly believe that there are approaches to medicine. I had a conversation with Professor Ben Eric, who explained why the use of the chewing method in certain instances, which is very much prevalent amongst the Sun people, Basaro, Lebakhotu, the chewing of certain medicines is not just because they don't have the materials to grind it or dilute it with water, but the very chewing of the medicine is part of the medicinal application of a particular plant. And it has the power because it is a mixture of your saliva and all sorts of very interesting things. And it is that kind of knowledge that I'm feeling is missing in the global fight against disease that is here that we are not using. I want to take a quick call, Prof, from Maria in Johannesburg. Hi, Maria.
Hello, Aubrey. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Maria. What is on your mind?
Just something I'd like to share with is that about 10 or 11 years ago, my mother and I were going through a very difficult time, and I read a book which made me go to the Peru, far deep into the Peru, to seek, you know, traditional healing. And what came across is that, and it did help, going there did help, but what struck me is that you've got to believe in these herbs, you know, and the fact that they were local, and if you are local, they've got a greater effect. And I think there's a lot to be said about that, but you've got to have the ready mindset. It's not just like, you know, we're going to package this and you can take it like you would,
yep,
you know, for a pizza mall or something like that. You,
yep,
know, that it's integral to the people who live here. It's integral to the environment. And I think it's completely, you know, it's very potent. And it's there. And I think for every disease and so forth that comes across, there is,
yeah,
an antidote to that, a local antidote,
yeah,
an environmental antidote,
yeah,
to put it that way.
Yeah.
But you've got to embrace it fully. You know,
yeah,
you've got to embrace it. I think.
Yeah. No. And that's precisely what I'm talking about, Maria, to say, what are some of the philosophies that are perhaps missing in our sort of Western approach to medicine that could, in leaps and bounds, help us deal with the reality of disease? And that's probably one of the issues that Maria is talking to, Prof. That, yes, there may be the material. We may know that a particular plant has got a particular medicinal thing. But if there is no faith, for example, in its healing qualities, maybe it might not do as well as it could if there was. And it is those kinds of dimensions that I'm talking about to say, is African medicine beginning to contribute to global medicine in that sense? Prof?
Yes. It's really not beginning. It has always contributed. It has always contributed, but it was always not, made popular. What is now happening is a lot of patients and a lot of people are now taking their own decisions about their health styles.
Yeah.
So patients now can stand up and say, but I prefer to take that is natural, And the world is now moving to begin gradually. It's not as fast as we want it to be, to gradually, I think, accept, traditional medicines. The slowest pace, I must say, in that acceptance of traditional medicines is actually in Africa.
Yes.
That's said. The slowest, if you go to Europe, you go to Germany, you go to Canada, majority, of people use traditional medicines there. And they do not have actually the medicines and the plants that we have. But they are so strongly believing in the medicinal plant because they could see we ourselves. I think we have been made. I don't know whether this has been through your witchcraft suppression act or this is another mindset, a colonial mindset to say ours is not the best.
Mm.
That is now bringing us backwards. When in fact the world is moving faster. So. And I think most probably the world likes it that way, because they will be able to keep us as Africans exactly where we are while they progress on our own knowledge.
Yeah.
But to keep us to start thinking, oh, ours is bad. I always make a simple example to say, if I were to, come to you and say, Aubrey, here's a bottle of Coca-Cola. Let's take a simple example.
Yeah.
I give it to you. You'll drink it without asking me a simple question, as to what is in that bottle of Coca-Cola, who made it, or what is it made of?
Yes.
But if I were to come up with a bottle of traditional medicine, you'll have so many questions about it,
Prof. I'm gonna stop here. There's got to be a second part to this conversation. You can hear it. There's a definite second part to this conversation. I'm definitely looking forward to that. Prof, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks, Aubrey. It was a pleasure.
Much appreciated.
So much.
Professor Mutalepula Matsabisa, Professor and Director of Pharmacology, Faculty of Health Sciences at the University of Free State.